just wonderful how I did send some hymns to Sally for this morning, and most of the ones I'd sent you didn't know. But the last one you've just sung, I've just said to Donald, Sally, I'd like to finish with that one as well, because the significance of those words were just so precious to me as you were singing them. You'll understand why in a moment. But so thank you so much. They've been so fitting, and it's wonderful when you sense that happening. You know that God is here. He's undertaking for all of us. It's not going to be easy for me this morning, but that's why I've come here to speak, because I believe you are a prayerful church, you are supportive. I find that really important. I didn't want to embarrass the lady behind me this morning, and I will do, but I just said thank you for your singing. You know, I sat there just have somebody sing. I don't know that song, but just have somebody who did singing it. Don't put her on the spot, but everybody's got a ministry, you know, and I'm saying that because I want people to realise that. And we need that. We need encouragement. I just want to go over you by means of introduction, really, before we look at our reading. The sequence of events over 5 months in 2013, that, you know, 2 years ago. In March 2013, I was preaching here for the first time, and I spoke of Jason. And in the following May, on the 29th of May, it was my 70th birthday. And all previous milestones, you know, the 40s, the 50s and the 60s, that everybody worry about, particularly being 50, I loved them. You know, I had great times. I was sent up in a hot air balloon for one of them and all sorts of things they tried to do, get rid of me. You know, my 70th birthday came, and I remember it well, because we had a big family celebration, and my son and his family are not Christians. And I remember feeling really challenged to think, I'm not going to miss this opportunity of just saying a few words on my 70th birthday about not only all the things, you know, I'm grateful for in the family, but I took 3 F's, just typical preacher, you know, 3 points, 3 F's, sermons, you know, and I talked of food. They all know I love food, you know, I absolutely did, and there's not much I won't eat, even as a dare. But, and my family, obviously I spoke of them and the joy I get from a family, but I also thought, no, I'm going to talk about my faith. Remember it vividly, just sat around the table and just saying, I want to talk to you about my faith. And it's very difficult to witness to members of your family. I'm fine on the streets with people I don't know, but talking to my family who don't know the Lord is really tough. And I bottle out most times. I thought, I'm not going to bottle out this time. And I did so. Those members of the family who were believers thanked me afterwards and said that was really important. And I do believe it was important for those who aren't believers. It seemed to make a difference. The following couple of weeks, a week or so after, Jason was freed from prison on license. And so I took him along to a prayer meeting. I have a Monday prayer meeting at Wood Green, and that's the only other thing other than Jason that I've really held on to on these last 2 years, leading that prayer meeting. I took Jason along, and unusually, my granddaughter was there. She'd finished her exams and she came along to that prayer meeting, and she was then 16. And it was a wonderful, wonderful meeting. You can imagine having Jason there. And at that time, he hadn't gone back onto the downward spiral. He was in pretty good nick, and he was giving testimony and thanking people and praying and reading. And then one lady, bless her heart, she meant well, but at the end of the prayer meeting, she said, she prayed, and she prayed a prayer, I have to say, it was praising me. I'm not saying it wasn't praising God. I'm not going to be hard on her. She was being genuinely grateful, but she was really saying, thank you, Lord, what a wonderful guy Ron is, and he leads this meeting and all black, like a list, you know. And I should have been aware of the danger of pride, you know, but having my granddaughter there and having Jason there, it was really nice to bask in people saying good things about you. We always like to have good things said about us. But the following morning, 6 o'clock in the morning, and I don't normally wait till about 6:30, but about 6 o'clock I woke up and I felt really, really terribly weak. I was due to go to work. I was still driving at that time, taking disabled children to school. And I just felt, I didn't know what was happening. I had tingling. I thought, am I going to have a stroke or something in my fingers and my toes? I felt cold when it was actually quite warm. And I was scared. The one bit of that one hit my phone tough, really. I'm not afraid, you know, be bold, be strong. I can remember the fear. I was afraid. And I remember I hardly ever had time off work, even when I was teaching and not only when I was driving. I couldn't remember it, but I remember picking up the phone at about 7:15, the earliest I could phone. I phoned the garage up and said, I'm not going to be able to come to work. I just know, I don't know what's wrong with me, but I don't feel right, I can't come. And thankfully, as a result, I was given time off work, and I'd already planned, we had one of these occasional days with a long weekend at the school, so we had time off, and I'd already planned to go over to my daughter's in Wales, who was running a holiday park there. It was the ideal place to go. I needed to get away. Still didn't. My wife drove all the way there, and she doesn't normally. That shows how weak I felt. I couldn't make decisions. I couldn't decide what to wear. I actually lost a stone in weight in a week. Now, that probably wasn't a bad thing, bearing in mind my love for food, but the rapidity of that loss was also scary. The fact that the weight was dropping off me. I felt weak and I lacked confidence. I didn't go to the doctors straight away, and that's typical of me, but I didn't, but it, ultimately I did. And the nearest the doctor could say was what they'd diagnosed me with when I finished teaching, was circumstantial stress. Anyway, I did seek help. I sought help particularly from a family, from a few friends. Dave Collett was one who was a great help to me, and the pastors at the church. But generally speaking, I didn't widely say to people there was anything wrong. I was trying to put a brave face on things and thinking everything will be all right in a week or so, but it wasn't. I was supported by work. I was given time to recover, and what's more, they paid me, and in fact, they ended up paying me for 12 months without me going to work at all. They were absolutely brilliant. We had a lot of criticism, employers, and it was the county council at that time, but they were absolutely first class, so sensitive, so grateful. And I retreated from all but two areas of service, as I say, the prayer meetings on a Monday and working with Jason. And I had a visit July 3rd with Jason here on the Wednesday night. And I can tell you now, that was a real struggle for me. I felt I had to come with him. I can't remember to this day how I got through it, because it was a real struggle. And that was the last time, in fact, I sort of faced up to a group of people in any form of ministry. So that was what happened. I cancelled all my preaching bookings, including one I had to come here on September the 29th of that year. And I would, in her absence, want to thank Hanukkah for the way she has been so sensitively supporting of me in the last 2 years. Asking how I was, without pressure, when you're ready, come back to Twinning. But it was a lovely way, and the way she expressed her support and prayers was really special. So anyway, that was what happened. And the result was a painful process, a really painful process that went on longer than I expected. But I can see now that it had a purpose. And I know now that during that period, God's changed me for the better. And it needed to change, but thankfully God didn't change. So what has he been teaching me? And this is why I'm pleased to come and share this time with you. First thing he taught me was that I also had a dependency problem. It was easy to see Jason's dependencies on drugs and alcohol. They were bad, they were obvious, they were horrible. They were life-threatening. But to see my own dependencies was difficult, but so necessary. My dependency actually was on family, church, and work. Now, they're all honourable things. You know, far be it from me to do them down. But, you know, the way in which I hadn't realised how much I depended on those things. Initially, work was the big thing. I found it awful not going to work. It wasn't financial that was the biggest blow, because they were paying me. But I loved that daily contact with people. I've always worked with children in teaching and then in transport, but even the other adults there. That discipline of getting up every day, going out and just seeing different people and chatting. I loved talking, and that was it. But it was feeding something in me that wasn't really the right thing. I've always been privileged to have a lovely family around me. And they're still so special. But, you know, God was teaching me all the way through. And church, I was a church elder. I'd already finished being an elder. But the way in which, again, that the church was something that I had to realize that all of these things God can take away. Some of you have learnt that here, haven't you? Hanukkah's learnt it. Some of you have learnt, have work taken away, family members taken away. And I've been so privileged in my life with Christian parents and no big money problems that to feel that God never seemed to have ever taken away something that I really, really wanted to hold on to. And here I could soon realise that this work thing was something God was saying, you've relied on that too much. You've become dependent and I'm going to take it away. Well, my initial reaction was, what could I do? I always wanted to be doing things, you know. I know my daughter always says to me, Dad, it's not what you do, it's what you are. But, you know, I always wanted to be, what can I do? That was my first question many days. Well, I have to say the first thing I did spontaneously on that very morning before I even went up to Wales, I had to first of all let my daughter to take my wife to a hospital because she had a hospital appointment and I couldn't even bear the thought of going. They were worried about leaving me at home, but they did. And I just spent the whole, about 6 hours, reading the Psalms. It's amazing how far you can get in 6 hours reading when you're hungry and desperate and crying out to God. I called out to God. I really did cry out to him. It reminds me, as I've looked through again in preparing this, in Psalm 18, the psalmist says, in my distress, I called to the Lord. I cried to my God for help. From his temple he heard my voice. My cry came before him into his ears. And that's what I did. I called out to God. I read the Psalms. And, you know, I've read the Psalms before, but I was reading those Psalms like I used to eat meals. I read it as I was so hungry and just wanted to feel and feel and feel, take it in. And Psalms, which I've known almost off by heart, suddenly came out as being so special and so real. God spoke to me through them. And this I found, when you sung that hymn, hide me now under your wings. When I went over to my daughter's in Wales, their holiday park is right next door to the Welsh Osprey Centre on the Dyfi Estuary. And I went out, they've got a bird hide on the park as well, and I decided to walk over to the Osprey Centre because I'd heard about the chicks that had been born. In fact, I think at that point it was one chick last year. And I went into the observatory and they'd had a terrible, terrible storm. It's written about in the book they published now, but they were fearful that that young chick wouldn't survive. And I remember seeing on the TV screens they've got with the webcams they've got, the osprey with his wings over that young chick, desperately protecting it. And I was reading at that time in the Psalms. I'm just going to read some of these verses to you now. Psalm 57. It's full of this in the Psalms, but where are we? Psalm 57, and I'm in 18. I'll get it right in a minute. 57 and verse 1. Have mercy, O God. Have mercy on me, for in you my soul takes refuge. I will take refuge in the shadow of your wings until the disaster has passed. Until the disaster has passed. That little word was so important to me because I had a feeling it was going on forever. I had a feeling nothing's getting any better. But he said, until, this is going to go past, this is going to finish. And then moving on from that in 61, Psalm 61, verse 4. For you have been my refuge, a strong tower against the foe. I long to dwell in your tent forever and take refuge, where? In the shelter of your wings. Psalm 63, verse 7. Because you are my help, I sing in the shadow of your wings. I stay close to you. Your right hand upholds me. That was just my personal experience, really, I have to say, singing in the shadow of God's wings. The hymns that I came back to and remembered, I just would sing. I'd go down by the lake and the bird hide in Wales and just sing those hymns. And thankfully, the words came back to me. And they meant so much more. Golden oldies, new ones, all sorts. But, you know, God spoke to me through the Psalms and through things like those osprey chicks. It was wonderful. Wonderful. So let's look at Psalm 62, which you can imagine was probably, of many of the Psalms, one that was really special to me and still is. I'll read the first 8 verses, if I may. The psalmist here says, "My soul finds rest in God alone. My salvation comes from him. He alone is my rock and my salvation. He is my fortress, and I shall never be shaken. How long will you assault a man? Would all you throw him down? The leaning wall, this tottering fence, they fully intend to topple him from his lofty place. They take delight in lies. With their mouths they bless, but in their hearts they curse. Find rest, O my soul, in God alone. My hope comes from him. He alone is my rock and my salvation. He is my fortress. I shall not be shaken. My salvation and my honour depend on God. He is my mighty rock, my refuge. Trust in him at all times, O people. Pour out your hearts to him, for God is our refuge." And that was really so special to me, and it's highlighted in my Bible. I've got the star here by that text in 61, Morben Issaf, that's the name of the Welsh holiday park, you know, because they're milestones in this journey that God has been taking me. First of all, we know from this psalm that it's a believer we're talking about. It's a believer who knows God. His salvation, he says, comes from God. He's saved. In a way, just like Jason was saved when he went into prison. That he was certain of. 3 times it talks of him being saved, really. His salvation is mentioned. But it's also a believer who was under attack. In verse 3, it says, "How long will you assault a man? Would all of you throw him down?" In verse 4, they fully intend to topple him. You see, this person was under attack. It may well have been an older person, but I don't believe this sort of situation is certainly exclusive to old people. When it talks about this leaning wall, this tottering fence, that's exactly what I felt like. But I'm also realistic to know that you could feel like that at 20 and 30 if you come under attack. What I realised afterwards, in a way, was that in my situation on that Tuesday morning after that Wednesday wonderful, prayerful, praiseful prayer meeting, I know now I was under attack, and that attack was of the devil. I'm not wishing to overemphasize that in terms of demonic activity, but it was the devil who was trying to get his sixpenneth in. He hated the fact of what was said and what was prayed and what has happened in Jason's life, and I was being attacked. In one sense, I'm glad the children aren't in for this portion, because it could be quite frightening. Could make people think, well, I'm not going to serve the Lord. I'm not going to stand up because I feel frightened. I don't want to make you fearful, but I do have to be realistic. The devil is real, and he finds many, many ways of having a go at us. So here is a believer who thankfully also knew where to find help. I spoke of my help that I had from people, but primarily, the greatest help I had was from God. And here, in verses 5 to 7, it says, "Find rest, O my soul, in God. My hope." I see your theme on your notice sheet for the month. This hope, isn't it? My hope comes from him. I depend on God. What wonderful things there. He depends, he knows where the help comes from, and he turns to God for that help. And I'm glad my family and all those people who were helping me didn't pester me to such an extent that it stopped me having the bulk of my time, which of course not going to work did permit. I used to get up just as early, but get straight into God's word, which I never did before. I used to get up, go to work and do it when I came home. But starting the day in God's word with God was just wonderful. But then finally in verse 8 there, the psalmist here was a believer who wanted others to know the secret of defeating the enemy, because he says, trust in him at all times, O people, pour out your hearts to him, for God is not just my refuge, but your all refuge as well. That's a fantastic personal knowledge. I just am so grateful that in my busy life, in my life, yes, for service for the Lord and that I neglected that, but here God was giving me a wonderful opportunity to recharge the batteries, to feed on him in such a way that his word became something that I'd never ever known it to that extent before. So first of all then, he did say, my soul finds rest. He says it in verse 1 and verse 6. You know, they used to call me, I don't know whether I told you this ever, I was called Rocket Ron. I've actually got a bus number plate that my employers printed in on yellow background in black, Rocket Ron, that they gave me. And it wasn't an inappropriate title. But I've also got a rocket in my shed that I picked up off the garden that was finished with, you know? And that's the rocket that I felt like, one that had no more fuel left, that was just a charred mess, really. But that's the sort of person I was. And so the thought of finding rest didn't come easily. But it wasn't doing nothing. I said I got up early, I used my time wisely. I spent time with God alone, and that's why the fact my soul finds rest in God alone really means in only God. You know, I'm dependent on him and nobody else. But for me it also meant being alone with God. Being alone with God. I'm so grateful for all those who supported me, particularly my wife and my family, that they recognise I need to go to a quiet. I've got a room at home, I would just go away and hide, and sometimes to my daughters in Wales, and I'd just go into that bird hide. I wasn't interested in the birds, it was just a beautiful place of solitude, and spend time with God alone. So I spent time in prayer, just pouring out to God how I felt. I spent time in his word. And unusually for me, I kept notes like a diary, readings, hymns, texts, and I mean texts, not the Bible texts. My granddaughter was brilliant at sending me texts to encourage me. Lovely verses of scripture, and she'd sometimes write them on cards in a way that only she could. They were special to me. They were personal. And it was brilliant, really. And I've got them pinned up all in my room now that are there, just surrounding me with these encouragements, really. But I'm glad I did keep notes, because I go back. I had to do it in preparing this, go back into that diary and so I could share properly with you what I felt. But of course, I had to, you know, deal with my dependencies, recognising what is temporal and what's eternal. And as you get older, you know, you do learn that there's so much that is temporal that you've depended on. It says, my salvation and my honour depend on God alone. Not work, not family, not church, all those good things. God is my rock, my fortress and my refuge. All three words are used here. And I found it so inspiring, really, to enter into this phase in my life, however long God gives me. Now I'm 72, but to really say, you know, it's such a positive thing. Because if your trust and your dependency is in God alone, literally everything else can go and you're still okay. And it's a wonderful, wonderful assurance. And it is that, more than anything else, that is helped me, encouraged me over the last 2 years. I still sometimes people say, well, what was wrong with you? We sat up in the vestry and we prayed this morning upstairs. It sounded like a nervous breakdown. Well, I saw an article. I used to look, a friend of mine at the time said to me, try getting UCB, United Christian Broadcast, Word for Today to come through each day on your computer. I've never been involved with that at all. But he showed me one text that he'd had, and I liked it, and he said, well, why don't you get it? And on the 4th of October 2013, this is the one that came up. It was called Post-Traumatic Growth. You've heard about post-traumatic stress, haven't you? This is post-traumatic growth, and this is what it said. It was from Romans 8:37, which said, despite all these things, overwhelming victory is ours through Christ. But it says, just as there is a condition known as post-traumatic stress, researchers are now talking about post-traumatic growth. One line of thinking is that adversity can lead to growth. Another is that the highest levels of growth can't be achieved without adversity. But adversity doesn't automatically bring growth. Much of the outcome depends on how you respond to it. Ernest Hemingway once wrote, sooner or later, the world breaks everyone, and those who are broken are strongest in the broken places. Sometimes that's true, but sometimes people write beautiful things and believe them to be true or hope them to be true, and they don't help. Hemingway himself had a brokenness that ended his life because the pain was too great. On the other hand, Joseph, who was betrayed by his family, falsely accused of rape and unjustly imprisoned, looked back on all that and said, God intended it for good, when he spoke to his brothers, didn't he? It says the key to post-traumatic growth is in seeing God in all things, drawing close to him, trusting him when you can't understand the situation, and knowing he only has your best interests at heart. When it comes to serving God, there are two sides to the coin, success and suffering. We like the first and try to avoid the second. But they're both part of God's plan. God called Paul into the ministry saying, I will show him how much he must suffer for my name's sake. But hard times didn't make Paul doubt his faith or the God he served. No, despite all these things, overwhelming victory is ours through Christ who loved us. That's what Paul wrote. And that came up, as I say, in the October of that year. And it's one of many. You see, it's got the holes in it. It's out of my diary file. I took it out as I was preparing this sermon. Because I can see now, yes, it was traumatic. It was necessary. And if God hadn't intervened in that way, I was such a stubborn person, I would have just perhaps taking a little bit of a break and just had reduced the hours and all those sort of things. God had to be very drastic with me till a point when, after 12 months of paying me without me doing any work, the authority actually said, we want to offer you a new contract. And I thought, oh, never, surely not. Not when I've had 12 months not well. Because I told them, they were quite regularly in contact with me, I told them I was feeling better. And my family were saying to me, quite wisely, Dad, or husband in my sense, why do you do it? Why not now learn to rest? Why not learn to spend time with God and build on what you've learned? Because you'll only go back to being Rocket Ron. And they were right. And I remember contacting the office and saying, I feel very embarrassed about this because you've paid me for 12 months. I feel I owe you something. And the people I'd spoken with there, I believe I witnessed to them because I spoke of my faith. And they said, no, you deserve it. And thank you for your service. You take it. And I wouldn't renew my contract with them. And I haven't done it. And I say I have been blessed. One thing I would say, it says in verse 8, doesn't it? Trust in him at all times. Those who I think who've suffered the most have been the most effective witnesses in my life. And I particularly think of two ladies. Some may know them. One is the wife of our former pastor, Paul Mallard, Edry Mallard, who has had a chronic health condition for many, many years since her last child was born. He wrote a book as a result of that called Invest in Suffering. And that was a great help to me during that period. And also, Mary Collett, Dave Collett's mother-in-law, wife of Brian Collett. She is still struggling because Brian has a very, very severe mental illness to such an extent. He used to be our church secretary. He can't, if I go to visit him, he can't remember me, he doesn't know who I am. You can't converse with him. And there doesn't appear to be any possibility of a cure. But the way Mary has coped with that has been a tremendous... In my worst moments, Sandra, my wife, would say to me, but at least don't get too downhearted. We're not in the same situation as Mary and Brian. We've got each other, we can talk to each other, we can pray together, we can get through this. And so people, even who have had the worst sort of adversity, it's tremendous, isn't it, that they sometimes, unknowingly, none of those ladies would think of themselves as being preachers or tremendous ministers, but they are. And I pray that, from what I've said this morning, far be it from me to want you to have to go through terrible trials, but I hope that in what I've said, one day, if necessary, the Lord will bring that to your memory. Turn to Psalm 62. He will make it live for you, and it will be real. And if in the meantime it does help you to make those big decisions in life that you do have to make, try and make sure that in doing them you really are depending on God and showing that you depend on him. And you're not just pushing him as a sort of rubber stamp after you've made your plans and your decisions, but put him first and he will stand the test. He will be there. I now know God, I can say this not piously, but closer and better than I've ever done in my Christian service. I don't intend to go back doing a lot of preaching. I'm not saying I won't come and see you again. I'd hope to come with Jason one day. But I don't believe that's primarily where God wants me. I believe I should be prepared, hopefully, to work with Dave Collett and with those people, and it will be a pavement ministry again. But if God gives me the strength to do that, that's fine. But I do believe God has blessed me tremendously with these experiences, and I do want to share them in that way as I've done. So thank you for being so patient. I hope I haven't gone too far over. And if we could now finish by singing again, perhaps with a little added meaning and significance, that hymn that we've just sung. If you'll forgive me, I'm going to sit down and take a drink, but I will hope to join in, and then we'll close in prayer. Thank you very much.